guys ever go and you get some nuggies, you eat those nuggies, right? And you're like, man, these are pretty good, but these aren't exactly what I want. Like, these are McDonald's nuggies, and I wanted some Jack in the Box nuggies. So you go to Jack in the Box, and you get some Jack in the Box nuggies, and you're like, you know what? These aren't really doing it for me, right? So you go to Wendy's, and you're like, give me some nuggies, right? I'm gonna give you some nuggies. You're like, these are pretty good too, but these aren't really what I'm looking for. So you go home, and you just make your own nuggies.
No, McDonald's are the only nuggies I need.
Literally no lack of faith in your nuggie corporations to supply you.
And that's why I'm the forever DM. Hello, everyone. We're talking about homebrew today. I am Ben.
I'm Mike.
And I want normal nuggies.
Yeah, that's Jake.
And today, as I say, we doing some home brew. We making our own nuggies, so to speak.
I'm still upset about these nuggies. You have no faith.
I've got all the faith I need in my own nuggie making abilities.
Alright.
I don't even need just directions.
Because I feel like this needs to be explained, at least on my end. Here's the thing. When I go get nuggies, because I grew up on McDonald's nuggies, I feel like it's not a real nuggie if it's not like that ground up chicken mixture that we all know is super gross. We eat it anyways because they're nuggies and they're good. Like Chick-fil-A, yeah, their nuggies are good. But am I going to go there if I want Chick-fil-A nuggie? Or, sorry.
I mean, I would think you'd go there if you wanted Chick-fil-A nuggies, and like you'd want to go to Chick-fil-A to get Chick-fil-A nuggies.
Am I going to go there if I just want to get nuggies? No. And one, it's because Chick-fil-A where we're at is always super crowded and I don't feel like waiting in that line. Two, McDonald's is very close to my house. And three, I just don't get the feeling like I'm eating chicken nuggies.
Look, man, I didn't mean to spark a nuggie war on our podcast here, man. I'm just trying
to
make
that's what you gone done and did, Ben.
If you got just a problem with McDonald's nuggets, you got a problem with me, and I suggest you let that one marinate.
I suggest you do.
I suggest you guys buy some Dino Nuggies and take a chill pill.
He's got a point. Dino Nuggies are also good.
Today we're talking about homebrew. Now, the biggest question, I think, on some people's minds is, what the heck's a homebrew? That sounds like a type of coffee.
The biggest question on a lot of minds is the nuggies, but continue.
Silence!
Why are we so obsessed with nuggies here?
I can't.
It's impossible to explain the hidden culture of this podcast community without being a part of it. But what is homebrew? Homebrew is anytime you take what's already established or you take an idea you have and you turn it into something for your game, whatever it might be, whether it's D&D, whether it's Vampire the Masquerade, whether it's Pathfinder, anything. You take that and you make it and you make rules for it and you put it in your game. That is homebrew.
I just want to say I really appreciate that those were the three games that you mentioned. Like, those are all the three games that I want to run.
So maybe you should get on that, Mike.
Listen. We have a lot of people, and most of the people that I want to play in my games have very busy schedules.
Yeah, I'm not one of them, so what?
That we already have, like, six other games in the queue.
Yeah, and I'm in all of them. What's up? What you want?
And I'm also in, like, all of them.
As of right now, I don't have to run any of them. Let's go, boys.
We're not letting you go, Jake. Wait. You're running that game.
Wait. Hold on. Back to the nuggies. The important matter.
Enough with the nuggies.
You can't silence me forever, you heathen.
What is homebrew? Anything you can think of can be homebrew. Whether it's what Michael did in our one shot not too long ago, where he just bumped up the health of everything we ran into, that is a form of homebrew. Or whether you write down an entire campaign and you guide your friends through this thing that you've created, that is also a form of homebrew. Right? Both are valid, both are good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the Merylists that they fought, normally they have like 200 something health and 7 attacks. I decided that that wasn't going to be enough to take on these tanks. So I went ahead and bumped them up to like 580 health and 13 attacks.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, was terrifying, but perfectly balanced somehow.
I wouldn't say perfectly balanced. I think if I would have increased their armor class a little bit more, it would have been
chef's kiss. When you got a rogue that deals like an average of 60 damage every turn. With one attack and then that twice a turn.
Listen, all I have to say about your rogue, thanks, Kevin. Moving on.
It's a great spell, man.
He's at home right now going, "You're welcome."
He's like, "And I'll do it again."
To be fair, I was invisible anyway, so and that was all on my own terms.
But the Merylists could see you.
Oh, well.
They have blindsight.
Well, that sounds like a Merylith problem.
Or not blindsight, true sight. That's what it is. But anyways, yeah. Homebrew. Back to it.
So, yeah, that's one example. For example, I wrote my own campaign world, and that was a difficult thing, but it was homebrew. Matt Mercer is a homebrew. He just is.
Matt Mercer himself. Except
he's not, because his content is now official, so he's not actually making homebrew anymore. You know how wild that is to me? Matt Mercer no longer can make homebrew content.
You know, what I'm really...
it's all becoming official as he makes it.
I'm kind of curious, though. Are they going to retroactively make the Tal'Dorei setting official?
Ooh, now that's a good question.
Because it's part of the same world of Wildemount.
Are they ever going to get in touch and buy the world of Odithia off of me for, like, I don't know, a bunch of royalties? I would love that. Just saying. Hit me up, guys. But, you know, who knows? These are questions that need answers.
And answers we may not receive.
Shut up. But yes, all of these things are great. And you know what? Sometimes homebrew can be something as simple as, I don't like the way this campaign book runs. I'm going to run it a little differently. We've had a great run through of Storm King's Thunder where our DM said, you know what? This is dumb. I'm not going to do it this way. And we finished it so much faster. There was another group that took like a year and a half to finish it, and we did it in like 2 months, and it was so much fun.
Like literally 2.5 months.
Yeah. I was just like, of like one playthrough, like one session a week.
We like leveled like, up man. Every session.
Yeah, I was like, man, absurd. I feel like we're really killing it right now. And our buddy Hayden was like, yeah, they're still slogging through all these side quests. And I was like, side quests? We did like 5 side quests in one session. What are you talking about? We just like went through them all.
There were also things that like we found out after talking with you guys that your DM had kind of like omitted some of the facts and stuff and not really worried about telling you guys about them. Whereas, like, Hayden was explaining, like, everything that we were asking about as characters.
Yeah. Well, like, he only included the stuff he thought was important. And that's another way to do homebrew. And it was really fun. It worked really well. He was a really experienced dungeon master. And he had a couple of extra rules that made gameplay more fun and made it quicker. And it was great. I loved it.
Yep.
Some of those rules I still implement to this day. That's another thing that you can do with homebrew, by the way. You can change the rules of your game.
It's true. I actually do that. That's one of the few homebrews that I do, if I were to do a homebrew at all.
Jake has a special homebrew thing about crits, critical hits.
Yeah, I do.
I have special rules about health potions, one I borrowed from Matt Mercer because it makes perfect sense. I have special rules about fall damage because I did the math on how much damage one should actually take when falling at terminal velocity.
It's pretty bonkers.
You also calculated like, or you looked into how far of a fall it would take to hit terminal velocity.
1500 feet.
That way we know like this is the kind of like max.
Yes.
Fall that you can take.
The maximum amount of fall damage you can take in my world is 150d6 if you fall 1500 feet. and 1d6 per 10 feet. Which normally the cap, I think, is like 20d6 or something like that. And I was like, that's not enough.
That's... Ben's over here thinking, I got monks jumping from towers to other towers in a storm and trying to punch people. I got to figure this out.
Yeah.
Actually, I think you figured it out before then. I took, like, the big boy damage for that, I think.
Yeah, that's another thing that Homebrew is great for. When your players ask, hey, can I do this thing? And you're like, I need a rule for that. And I don't have time to look through the book or online forums to figure out what I should do. Do this.
Well, and so that's the other thing. Like, you have a Homebrew rule regarding max fall damage. You also have a Homebrew rule within that of what damage you're taking. Because if you're going rules as written, that would be 300d6, not 150.
See, I thought it was, but I think someone pointed out to me the other day that what I was doing was actually, I was mistaken. Right? Because I think it's 1d6 per 10 feet. I always thought it was 2d6 because someone told me that, well, a long time ago, and I never bothered to check.
Oh, yeah, I always thought it was 2d6 per 10 feet.
I mean, if that's the case, then yeah, 300d6, let's go. Are you ready to die?
Oh, no, never mind. It is 1d6 per every 10 feet. Never mind.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah,
I was
wrong. 150. It's okay, boys. We just cut the damage in half. That works. That's another thing you got to do with homebrew sometimes, man. Like, not everybody is aware of the rules, per se. So if you're like, this is my homebrew rule, and somebody's like, wait, what's the regular rule? And you could just be like, I don't know.
Doesn't matter, this is my homebrew rule.
Yeah.
And they go, okay.
And if you're a DM who's implementing homebrew rules that are significantly different from the rules that are in the book,
yes.
If you're playing with people that you haven't really played with before, make sure you tell them before the game starts what those like major rule changes are, so that way they don't do something thinking it's gonna work one way and then it's entirely different and be like, what? You never told me about that. And it's like, well, yeah, I kind of did at session zero because, you know, you were a good DM and told him.
Yeah, just write up a contract with every rule change and make them sign it. Then when they argue, you pull out the contract that they signed and just be like, boom.
Exactly.
I'm rules lawyering the wrong set of rules.
But make it like a 500-page contract that's filled with a bunch of fluff so that way people are just like, too intimidated to read the whole thing and they can still be shocked.
Boys, I hate to be this guy, but we're very far off topic.
We really are. 15
minutes into the episode.
We're giving examples.
So, what kind of things can you homebrew? Everything. You can homebrew, as we said, the rules of the game. You can homebrew specific monster stat blocks. You can homebrew some NPC stat blocks, which are really the same thing when you get down to the nitty gritty. You can make custom items, custom spells, custom classes, add changes to classes, subclasses, races, sub-races. You can add those as much as you want. You can make custom feats, custom epic boons. Actually, I think in the DMG, there's an option for custom epic boons that's just in there. Custom, did I say custom feats? Custom feats?
Yeah.
Okay, I said that already.
And if you're ever curious about what some examples of these are, maybe you should go subscribe to our Patreon, where Ben has put down some monsters and NPCs and items.
Did someone say examples?
Examples.
Examples? What? That's crazy. How about the Thanksgiving turkey that I still haven't released because I'm a failure? The CR30 horrifying colossal monstrosity thing that I was going to release for Thanksgiving. Hey, maybe next year, you know, who knows?
It's okay, I just put Santa's Magic Berries up on the website last week.
Hey, Santa's Magic Berries. Yes, those are cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ooh, here's one that I wrote that's weird. It's an epic boon. For anyone who has not played an epic level campaign, you probably don't know what the heck that is. That is like a feat that you take after level 20. It's crazy. They're really good. This one's called the Boon of Awakening. Well, and so that's the other thing. Like, and essentially,
you have a homebrew rule regarding invincible. Max fall damage. You However, also have you a homebrew rule within that
way, shape, of or form.
What damage you're taking. Pretty fantastic. Because if you're going you rules as written, support.
Also you don't sleep, and in that order would be 300 to maintain D6, your not 150. Dreamlike state, you have to feed on the dreams of those sleeping around you, and if you do so, they do not get the benefits of any rest they would have gotten otherwise.
You're Freddy Krueger!
Kind of. You're just the ultimate support that also has drawbacks. And that's something I homebrewed after watching a specific anime I will not name here at this time.
Oh, no, never mind. It is 1d6 per
attempt. That's just one example of the things you can homebrew. I was wrong.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things to homebrew is rules. And that's part of why I'm planning, like, when I fully start running my own 5e campaign, I'm going to be including some rules from Pathfinder or from past editions of D&D. And if you're depending on what I like and what I don't like, I might even pull some stuff from Vampire the Masquerade. That are significantly different from the rules that
huge,
are in the book.
Like, potluck.
If you're
rules,
playing with people that you haven't really played with before, because
it's not official 5e
content,
you
tell them before the game starts what those like
years.
Major rule changes are, so that way they don't do something thinking it's going to work one way and then it's entirely different and be like, "What? You never told me about that." And it's like, well, yeah, I kind of did at session zero, because, you know,
I don't head out.
Wait, no. Mike, no.
Exactly.
So, how do you create
But make it like a 500-page contract that's filled with a bunch of fluff, so that way people are just, like, too intimidated to read the whole thing, and they can still be shocked.
New-time homebrewer, you know. Not very experienced. How would I go about
we
this?
We really are.
The number one best way, in my opinion, is to start with something that's already been made. For example, if you're making a subclass, let's take the anti-mage that I created. I started with the template of another subclass that is also a fighter subclass. It's called the Eldritch Knight. And I took that and I warped it and I changed it. And once I had come up with the rough draft, I actually ran it by you guys, which is another thing that's great to do, because what you think might be balanced, other people might find issues with in the way you worded it. They could find a way to break it in a way you didn't intend to. So I ran it by my fellow travelers, and they said, you know what? They had a couple of edits, and I went and made those edits, and then I ran it by another friend of mine. And even as I played it,
we had more edits.
Yeah. And then even then, as I played it, I realized there was another issue with it that I had to change. So it's a process. You're never going to get it right the first time. That's a good way to do it, to start with something else and then change it just slightly. Another way is to use a template. So if you want to create a monster stat block, you have, you know, a template, a thing that you can use to set up all of the things you need to keep track of, their stats, their abilities, all of the interesting attacks and actions they might have. On that point, in the monster manual, there is actually a thing that can help you homebrew some stat blocks, which can be for an NPC, a monster, or a god even, if you really wanted to. And it runs you through quite a bit, starting with its size, and it tells you just how much space it takes up, you know, tiny 2.5 by 2.5 foot all the way up to gargantuan, which is 20 feet by 20 feet or larger, and it gives you examples of different monsters that fit that creature type, you know, aberration, beast, celestial, construct, dragon, elementals, fae, fiends, giants, humanoids, monsters, oozes, plants, undead, and anything else you can come up with off the top of your head.
Did you say that one?
I did say humanoid. And then there's tags, which is a more specific version. So, for example, if you have a humanoid, you can tag it as an orc or a human or an elf or anything of that nature. Or if it's a fiend, you can, you know, tag it as a demon or a devil or a yugoloth or whatever. Then there's alignment. Now, some people throw out alignment. That's a homebrew rule that you can decide on yourself. I like alignment. I think it serves a good purpose. I just think the DM should decide what alignment means in your world, and the players should kind of decide what their character's alignment is based on that. Not necessarily on what they think alignment means. Because it doesn't matter what you think the alignment means. It's what the DM says alignment means, because he actually is the one that needs that to be accurate.
Hey, Ben, I have a question for you real quick.
What's up?
How much longer do you think Michael's going to keep this bit going that he left the podcast?
You know, honestly, I didn't even notice that's what he was doing.
Oh, no. You didn't notice he was gone.
Well, I noticed he was being quiet, but I was just in my own little world, you know, talking about homebrew and all that.
Well, now he won't come back for sure.
Well, now I notice he's gone. Michael, Traveler Mike, come back. The best part
is that, well, the listeners don't know, but we know that he's has to be here, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to hear each other.
Yeah.
Because of our recording setup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we know he's here and listening right now.
Traveler Mike, come back. We'll get you nuggies.
Whoa.
Did someone say nuggies?
Hold on.
I didn't happen to say nuggies. I said that Jake would get you nuggies.
I didn't agree to this. I didn't, bro. I'm broke, okay? I can barely even afford to buy my own nuggies.
Lies. We'll buy him nuggies with our ad revenue. But anyways, after alignment comes armor class. Now, armor class is where balancing starts to become a big thing. Because the higher its armor, the harder it is to hit. So, for example, off the top of your head, Jake, what is Spade's modifier to hit?
Modifier to hit?
Yes.
Plus, what level are we? 10. Plus 10.
Plus 10?
Yeah.
So that means if you roll the roll average time, which is about 10, 11, right? If you were to do that, and you wanted them to hit about 50% of the time, you would make their armor class a 20.
Yeah.
Because if they roll 10 or higher, they'll hit. If they roll below that, then they won't.
Yeah. This is, of course, for CR that is equal to a level 15 character.
Well, or no.
At least a group of 15 characters going up against it, right?
Well, not exactly. See, this is where it gets complicated. Because this is where hit armor class versus hit points, you know, how tanky is it? Because if you want it, if you're expecting them to hit about 50% of the time, then based on that, you can decide how many hit points it should have about based on what challenge rating you want it to have.
Yeah.
But let's say you up its armor class. Now they're only hitting 25% of the time. Maybe you don't need as many hit points because you're not expecting them to hit as much. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you keep its hit points the same. You're just like, ha 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 ha, you suck.
Nerd.
Or you lower its armor class, but give it a bunch of hit points. It's easy to hit, but hard to damage. Boy. You know?
Hard to damage, yeah.
And those two factors really determine how long combat goes on for if you're expecting your party to win.
Yeah.
Now, the Monster Manual recommends you base your hit points on the size, or at least hit dice by the size of the creature. So if it's tiny, give it a d4. If it's small, a d6. All the way up to gargantuan with a d20.
Mm-hmm.
That works, but then you have to work out exactly how many of those hit dice to give it based on what challenge rating it is. And at that point, you might be better off giving it a larger hit dice in order to just not have like, it's a gargantuan. It's a tiny creature, but it's a CR25, so it has 3,000 d4 hit dice. Like, what? No.
And also, to argue a point here, you can't exactly rely on just hit dice, right? Because hypothetically, you could have a gargantuan creature that is worth, you know, like, I don't know, 30 d20, right? Which could be a reasonable amount of health, but you roll ones on all your 20s, and now he has 30 health.
Well, at that point, most of the time, you just take average when you're making a stat block. You know what I mean? So for a d20, it'd be 10.5. And then you add the constitution modifier times the amount of hit dice. Just like it was their level.
Yeah.
I see.
I mean, if you're a mad lad and you want to roll all those d20s for hit points, dude, go for it. I'm not going to stop you.
You know, or maybe you want to be a super mad lad and give it max for every die.
How about this?
That's actually a really good way to turn a standard stat block into a boss.
Yeah.
Oh.
You take its hit points and you max them out and you take its damage and you double the dice you roll. Now, this is where it gets a little more complicated in terms of balancing. Speed. What kind of encounter is this? Spade, how fast can you run in a turn?
Ooh, even more complicated than the last question.
All right, how fast can Ignimaeus run in one turn?
If he's dashing, 60 feet.
Okay, so 60 feet.
Hold on, I'll get you an answer. Just give me a second.
So speed can play an important role, because some characters, like, you know, the sorcerer or the druid, might have 60 foot movement max, right? So that's their mobility, whereas a monk or a rogue might have something like 200. So if you're going to have a creature that's faster than the average, right, then you're going to need players who are faster in order to keep up.
With one key point.
360 feet. Okay.
With one key point.
So let's say you wanted to separate one party member from the rest, and you know for a fact one is faster than the others. Maybe you make this particular enemy really fast and really obnoxious so that that person will chase them.
Ooh, I would
take maybe
so quick.
Maybe you make them slow so that your party has no trouble at all keeping up with this thing. Or you make it average so that they have the same mobility, you know?
But it's just one of those things. You also have to factor in, do you want it to still be able to escape even the fastest and give it a fly speed?
Yeah, that's another thing. Does it have a burrow, climb, fly, or swim speed? Because then the encounter just gets really complicated, especially if it has a burrow speed. Oh my god. It's tunneling under the ground. Does it leave a trail? No! Wait, why? Because it says so on the stat block!
Yeah, maybe you are fighting somebody who is like Mirio from My Hero Academia, and they can literally just phase.
Yep. Or can they only burrow through certain things? Maybe they can only burrow through sand, so if you get them onto rock, they can't burrow, and then they can't escape.
Haha, loser. Sorry.
Or maybe it can burrow through ice, but maybe it can't swim.
Sorry,
that would be an interesting one.
Talking a lot
one.
About Spade, and he just kind of burst out.
So the next thing, ability scores. The same thing that any player character has. It can determine a lot. It can determine how strong, how agile, how hardy, how intelligent a creature is. Never underestimate an intelligent monster.
Yeah.
Because they are devious.
And they can make deductions in combat.
Yeah, it is not unheard of.
Have to feel bad about thinking with his own.
It is not unheard of for a dungeon master to ask to see every character sheet when you get into a boss fight, just because they're so intelligent, they would automatically know everything that's on your stat block. That is not an unheard of thing in my circle.
And one thing to kind of take into account, and I admit, I'm really bad about this, even when I'm using creatures that are not homebrew. If you are using creatures that are highly intelligent or highly wiz-based, then maybe they are able to form better battle strategies and be tacticians against the party. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they know, okay, this fight, I'm not going to win. Let me see if I can distract them and get away.
Yeah.
And that's something to take into account as well, is how much do you want your monster that you're building to kind of understand their situations? Because maybe you want them to be like that. Maybe you want them to be kind of tacticians and stuff like that nature. Or maybe you just want them to be big hulking brutes that are just there to punch things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and either way, you kind of have to balance that out. You know, if this character that you're making a stat block for is a wizard, you don't want to skimp on their intelligence. You may maybe skimp on their strength.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're not as strong. Maybe they're not even as charismatic. Maybe there's some nerd who makes podcasts for a living, you know?
Who does that?
That's weird. I don't know. Not
Podcast people
us.
are losers.
Not us, that's for sure.
Podcast people are losers.
Definitely not the two of us that work 40 hours a week. And not on the podcast.
Sorry,
Sorry,
in here.
I had to get that out.
Are you guys trying to diss me for not having a job
No,
other than
silence.
that?
This is your job now. Next thing it says in the monster manual, saving throws. Just like how a player character has saving throws, monsters have saving throws. And they add their proficiency bonus, which is determined by their challenge rating, generally. So they can be especially good at resisting certain things, like, I don't know, an assassin that's good at dex saves. That would be crazy, right? It's just like, man, I threw a fireball at that guy, but he did a backflip and he's fine. That's weird.
The rogue's like, yeah, I've never seen that before. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's the same thing as player characters. You know, some people are good at avoiding things, and that's what you give them. And then in that same category, it gives you proficiency bonus by challenge rating, starting at challenge rating 0 at a proficiency bonus of +2, all the way up to a CR 30 at proficiency bonus of +9. Yeah, it follows the same lines as a player character's level, but goes past it.
Makes it easier, I guess.
Yeah. Now, another thing that monster stat blocks can have that you might not think about at first are skills. Because not every homebrew thing you make has to be all about combat. Sometimes they're good at tracking the party. They have survival skills, maybe. Or maybe they're very charismatic and they have high deception that your party tries to roll insight against all the time, but they can't figure it out. Or maybe they're just a helpful companion that follows the party around and they have all these useful skills. Maybe they even have tool proficiencies. Maybe they have proficiency in lockpicking and they can help you get through difficult encounters other that otherwise you would be stuck on. Then comes the weird ones. Vulnerabilities, resistances, and immunities. Are you gonna make your super ultimate end game boss immune to every condition? If so, why are you like this? Are you making them completely immune to certain damage types but vulnerable to others?
That just sounds like fun.
Are you making them resistant to all non-magical attacks and completely immune to any spell below fifth level? Are you a Rakshasa? That's a thing, by the way. Rakshasas do that. It's terrifying.
All right.
Yeah, these are the kind of things that there are no limits to this. Are you going to add your own homebrew thing to it? Like a damage threshold that I took from 3.5 that completely pisses Spade off? Who knows? And
My whole thing is lots of small attack.
get good.
I'll freaking
And then
multi-class to murder that man.
you won't.
You're right, I won't.
Didn't know Spade was an evil character.
Next up, senses. Now, these can be interesting. Like Merilith's fighting an invisible dude, some things can see you even if you're invisible or try to hide from them very well. Some of these things include just straight up your passive perception. That's the thing that goes in that section. Also, blind sight, dark vision, tremor sense, true sight, and anything else you can figure out. Devil sight, ghost sense, all that stuff. And it's just a special way that your creature can see the world, perceive the world that maybe other creatures cannot. And you can get very specific with it. Like, it has, let's say your creature only detects things when they move based on sound. So they have blindsight out to a certain range, and after that they are completely blind. That's a thing written on some stat blocks that exists in the actual like D&D world. I was thinking like some Underdark thingies.
Yeah.
And then what languages does this thing speak? How do you communicate with it? How many languages does it know? Does it read them and write them and speak them as well? Does it know telepathy? Can it communicate with anything? These are all questions you must ask yourself. And the party will be sure to ask you, especially if it's yelling inane things at them and they're like, do I understand what it said?
Ha ha! Spade wins again! He understands all tongues!
I don't know, do you understand my homebrew language that can only be understood by the ancient old ones?
Yes.
Monks can.
My skill says so.
Well, I'm homebrewing against that rule. Meh.
You're the DM, and I wish I could argue, but I won't.
Ha!
I will just sit finally, quietly and a little upset, but continue playing the game, because that's what happens.
Finally, we bring us to the challenge rating. Now, I am of the opinion you should decide this before you start homebrewing whatever it is you're doing.
Oh, okay.
Because everything else, in my opinion, should be determined by its challenge rating. Unless you're just making it to make it, and whatever CR it is, that's what it is. But then you have to plug it into a CR calculator, and those are wildly bad.
And also, it just seems a little silly because, I mean, why are you making this, right? Normally, because, like, as from a normal viewpoint, you're making this as a DM for your party, so you already know what challenge rating it should be at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You should accommodate for that as you continue making it from there forward. Because, I mean, I hope you're planning to use this in a soon future session or whatever. You're mm-hmm. not just making this for no reason.
Yes.
However, it is completely valid if you want to just make a whole bunch of homebrew creatures for no reason with the hopes of using them in the future.
No, you're weird and you should stop. I'm just kidding. I don't care.
I'm not gonna lie, I've done that. Sometimes I'll take a stat block that exists. Like, I made a mechanical werewolf when I was first starting out. It still holds up pretty well. The stat block is pretty neat. It's pretty well balanced for its CR. But I just took a standard werewolf, like a CR3, and I was like, let's make it metal.
Robot.
And then it went up to like a CR5 after I was done, and I was like, this works. This works for me. I tested it out on some CR5s and on some level 5s, and I was like, yeah, this is pretty balanced. Get behind this.
All right.
And its experience points, if you're playing with experience points, are determined by its CR. So if you kill it, that's how many you would get. And it starts at 0 or 10 for CR0, all the way up to CR30 at 155,000 experience.
Which is obviously very important, because if you're playing by XP, you know, as you continuously get bigger levels, the gaps between levels for XP thresholds are much bigger and bigger, so unless you want to just make it a grind game, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Gotta up the stakes a bit more and more as you go.
Or you could just do milestone.
Bigger rewards for the bigger accomplishments.
Or you could just do milestone like a normal person. Well, I wish we were done, but we're not. Then you get into special traits.
We're in the final stretch.
Then you get into special traits. Things that are about your character. Things that make it actually personalized. So far, it's all been numbers games, baby, but not anymore. Now you get to things like innate spell casting. Regular spellcasting, psionics, things of that nature, things that make it unique, damage threshold,
yeah,
blind beyond a certain range. Mm-hmm. Then you get into actions, melee and ranged attacks, multi-attack, how much ammunition it has. Then you get into reactions, if it can do something special, or if it has just specific ones that it favors,
or maybe it has actions or layer actions.
Well, first is limited usage. Right. You can put a limited use, certain amount of times per day, or there's a recharge on like a 5 or 6 on a D6 that's mm-hmm. it recharges at the beginning of its turn, or recharge after a short or long rest if it's something that's meant to stick with the party for a while. Then there's equipment. Does your thing have equipment? What equipment does it have? What does it do? Is it currently using it, or does it just have it? What is it? Now, legendary creatures are a whole nother bag of bees. They have legendary actions that can be taken in between turns in the middle of combat. It's just like, you know, I feel like doing a thing, and then it does it. It's like, what? Why did it do a thing? It's not its turn. It's just like, legendary actions, bro. And of course, if it's a legendary creature, it must have a legendary creature lair, which means it has lair actions and regional effects, which are effects that take place just by it existing in a place, usually for about 10 miles. So that's just homebrewing creatures, but that's, I think, the most complicated one. So I'm just going to stop there.
Okay.
So yeah, a homebrew can be intimidating at first. I'm not going to lie. But honestly, I've broken many campaigns with my homebrew, and I still homebrew. So, I mean, go for it. You're not really going to lose much. And you can always be like, hey, this is broken. We should probably change this. And most people will be like, yeah, it's pretty broken. Let's change it.
I remember one time in the session, you were like, hey, Jake, how's your character's HP looking over there? Are these guys doing too much damage? And I was over here and I was just like, yes, they do. I am very hurt. And you were like, okay. And then you tweaked it literally right then and there.
Yeah, I think one of the most valuable things that if you are creating homebrew, whether it be a spell or a monster stat block or whatever it is, maybe just use it in a one shot. Test it out. Play test. That's the best way to try and figure out if it's balanced or if you need to tweak it to be a little bit more powerful or a little bit less powerful, and really see how it plays in game. Because it's one thing to see on paper, okay, this is how it should work. But then to actually see it in play, like, we thought that the anti-mage was going to be perfectly fine. Then we found out through playtest and that one shot that we did for you guys that there were a couple tweaks that we could make to it to make it even better.
Yeah.
Truth, truth. And remember, as the DM, you always have final say on what is approved and what's not for your game. Mm-hmm. So even if your players are like, hey, I made this thing, can I, like, use it? And then you're like, sure, and then you realize it's broken within 5 minutes, you can be like, okay, that's enough of that.
Yeah, and I think one of my favorite things, so Ben, you had found a spell that is only usable by wizards and I think it was artificers, but basically it was a spell that allowed you to create more spell slots at the expense of a higher spell slot.
Uh-huh.
And you asked me while we were at work one day, you were like, hey, what if we were to give this as something that, like, a sorcerer could use? And within 5 minutes, we found out how to completely break the game and make infinite spell slots.
This is true.
So we realized, yeah, that's not balanced. It does not work for sorcerers. All right. And that's another thing is, you know, just talk it out with your players. See, how can we break this if we're really trying to?
Uh-huh. That's a discussion that I like to have every single day of my life, Michael.
Moving on, I think it's time to put what we've learned to the test.
Okay.
Are you saying that we're going to make something right here, right now?
Okay.
I am saying that.
Here's what I suggest, boys.
All right.
Okay, what are we making? What are we making, Jake?
You guys know me. I'm not going to lie. I'm not big on homebrew. I don't do it much. I don't have too much to contribute to this episode, typically. But I suggest a good solution to this problem of Jacob not being, you know, as important on this episode. We make me.
All right. So name, we're going to put it in here as Traveler Jake. And by the way, we're going to make this available on our Patreon and on our website.
Yeah, so it's going to be... It's going to be on Patreon as a free thing. You don't have to be subscribed, but, you know, if you like it and you want to see more stuff, maybe you do subscribe and get access to the other things. It's also going to be on the website, and we're also going to post it on our Instagram.
Now, here's the thing, boys. This is the important thing. Do we make this realistic to the real life me, or do we make it cool?
We're going to add some fantasy flavor to it.
Okay, so I'm definitely a halfling then, yes. Now, here's the thing. Am I, like, an ally to the group, or am I a bad guy?
You're good. You're a good guy.
Okay, I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy.
You are so, chaotic good.
Okay. Let's start off with my CR, yeah?
No, we don't start off with CR. We start working with everything else, and then CR is pretty all much right. The last thing that we're going to figure out.
So, just because no one can see what I did, I already put in humanoid, and in parentheses I put halfling, because we all know he wants to be. For his alignment, I put chaotic good.
Okay.
He's
okay.
A good boy, he's just very odd.
Okay. Yeah.
He's a halfling. His speed has to be 25 feet, not 30 feet. That's how halflings
work. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
But...
No, 325 feet. Just 25 feet.
I also am going to include a 20-foot climb speed because Jacob is very agile.
Ooh, okay. So we're going to give him some good dex. So I'll go ahead and put his dex at, like, let's say 16, 17?
Yeah, I like 16.
16? All right, so that puts him at a plus 3 modifier.
Mm-hmm. I think strength, we should give him an 11.
I think that's a fair number.
I think my only two other good stats should be intelligence and charisma. Let's be real here.
Intelligence, I'm going to give you like what, a 15, 16?
Okay. Charisma, I feel like should be my highest stat, yeah.
Charisma, I think you should be an 18.
18.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Wisdom, negative 5. No, that's con.
That's real bad.
That's really bad. That's not even possible.
Let's put my wisdom at like 8 or 7.
We'll put it at 8. We're not going to make you like that bad.
Okay.
And con 13, that's fair. Okay, what saving throws is Jake proficient in? Ironically, I would say not dex, because he can't really dodge things that well. He can't see that well.
It's true.
Yeah.
Charisma, though.
Charisma saving charisma, throws.
Charisma
sure.
And intelligence.
Yeah.
Either charisma and intelligence or charisma and wisdom.
I'm going to put intelligence. So we don't know what your proficiency bonus is yet, because we don't know your CR yet.
Yeah.
And then charisma.
Skills persuasion. Deception.
Why?
And acrobatics.
Alright. Condition immunities. So I'm actually going to fix this because it should be their own thing each time. Condition immunities. What is Jake completely immune to? Awkward. Situations.
Okay, hold on. Okay. Let's say I can't be... I'm immune to being charmed.
Okay, so you're immune to awkward situations and the charmed effect.
Can I have a condition vulnerability?
Sure.
I'm easily frightened.
So I'll go ahead and just condition control C. Condition this vulnerability.
This is what you guys get for not planning what we were going to make before the episode.
We don't need to plan. I rather like this so far.
I get to throw this on you.
Vulnerabilities. He's... And in parentheses, I'll put
disadvantage. Which advantage is funny because normally halflings have advantage.
Yeah.
But not me.
You're a special halfling.
And vulnerabilities to damage.
Vulnerabilities, all damage.
Oh boy. Except for psychic.
Oh, like, yeah. All damage.
The opposite of a boat. The opposite.
Psychic.
He has a resistance to psychic damage.
Psychic damage, yeah.
This is so incorrectly spelled, but it worked out.
Resistance to psychic damage. And he's also resistant to
Okay.
Senses. His passive perception, that's his wisdom, minus one. But he has a... Is he proficient in perception? No, he's not. So it's like nine.
Yeah.
Languages.
That makes sense.
He speaks the common tongue. Have you ever
met me? I'm very oblivious.
He speaks halfling.
And he speaks nerd.
He speaks nerd?
Yeah.
I would say he also speaks meme. Meme tongue.
Yeah. He speaks nuggy.
Nuggy. He can communicate with the nuggies.
Yep.
And thieves can't.
And thieves can't, yeah.
That's it.
Thieves can't. And also bad Spanish.
All right. Thank you for that one.
No problem. All right, so special abilities that he has. Let's see. Let's get creative here. He has.
Okay. Okay. How about?
Oh, hold on. He's got fun guy aura.
Fun guy aura.
Yeah. any creature. That starts its turn
within 10 feet of me.
Within 10 feet of Jake. Must succeed on a
wisdom saving throw.
Charisma
saving throw.
Oh, okay.
Saving throw. Or have an absolutely fun time, aka they are charmed.
Oh yeah, passive charming ability.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay, and then we're also gonna go. I'm gonna throw in some like. Ooh, hold on. Extrovert power activate.
I feel like I should have an extrovert power and an introvert power.
Yeah. So extrovert power activate. Jake gains one temp.
Let's see. One temporary hit point for hit every point creature, for every friendly creature within 30 feet of him. Every
friendly time. Creature.
For 1 minute.
Oh, jeez. 30 feet. Of him.
No, not 340 feet.
Oh, oof. God.
I got you. Keep going.
The 30 feet of him. For
10 minutes?
No, just, you know what? No.
Oh, my gosh.
These last until there are no more friendly creatures.
Well, I mean, does this happen every turn? Like automatically?
Yes.
So then they just keep overlapping each other.
Like they don't stack though.
Yeah. Exactly. And so eventually I have zero.
You know what? Yeah, these last until Jake takes a nap. There we go.
And now introvert power active.
Okay. Introvert.
Ooh, okay, so here's the thing. I could only have one of these active at a time.
Right? Well, here's the thing. Introvert power activate. Jake gains one temp hit point. You don't know. Jake gains 10.
Ooh.
10 hit points.
The power of solitude.
If there are no creatures within 10 feet
10 feet of me.
Within 10 feet of him for at least 10 minutes.
Okay, okay.
These last until there taken out. Is a friendly creature.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Slow starts in the morning, but then once I'm into it, I'm into it.
I've seen within 10 feet.
All right. Of him. I suggest one last ability here for me.
Okay.
It's called ADHD.
ADHD. What will it do, Jake?
When undisturbed, Jake can
weigh in. You
know, can copy spells.
Okay.
And study and research things, right? Just like general nerd stuff. At twice the speed and half the gold price.
So you're a wizard.
No, but I can do it for others. I can copy stuff into other people's spell books and whatnot.
Can study and research spells and other topics.
But I have to be doing it alone.
For half the cost.
And time.
And time required. But only. Let's see. For someone else.
It's because I don't want to ruin the expectations, you know?
I feel like. All right. So what actions will you have, my friend?
I feel like. Am I a spellcaster? I feel like I'm a spellcaster, right?
I feel like you're a spellcaster, man.
He will have the gift of gab.
Gift of gab.
The gift of gab.
Gift of gab.
It's like vicious mockery, but
it is a mental attack.
I'm gonna put ranged spell attack.
Yeah.
Spell attack, and we don't know what to hit is yet.
It's got to be based off my
reach
charisma,
is so. 60 feet.
Range. 60 feet. One target?
Yeah.
Yep. And on a hit, how much damage should he do?
It deals 2d6 plus his modifier.
So for this is charisma, so it'd be plus 4.
Yeah.
Which is okay, an average of
10.
3.5 times 2. Yeah, 10.
Okay. Second attack action, right? Or second action that I can do. Gift of jab.
That one's
does
a melee attack.
The exact same thing, except it's healing. Because I'm like, hey, get a load of this guy. You know? Ranged spell. Yes, just spell.
Not even an attack. It's just
I'm
going to
put it as an attack anyway. Because you still have to hit.
Oh, that's a good
60
point.
60 feet.
I have to. Oh, yeah, because I don't use a spell slot or anything, right? So it's just kind of.
One target hit. It's going to be. I'm going to put on a hit, it heals 11, which is average of 11, which is
plus 4.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We gotta make sure that we clean these typos before we post.
Oh yeah,
I will.
Yeah, gift of jab, yeah.
I like this.
All right, okay. So what CR are we looking at right now?
And then hold on, one more action.
Okay.
A quick stab.
Well, we also have to figure out armor class and hit points.
You're right.
So armor class. Jake is the kind of person, because he likes his leather jacket, so he would wear leather armor. So, we would do 11 plus dex, which is 14.
Plus something to hit.
Well, this one's dex-based. Range, 5 feet, yep.
Yeah, so Gift of Gab and Gift of Jab would both be
one,
a plus 4.
A quick stab is a bonus action.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm forgetting about the...
A quick stab is a bonus action, though. Because it's quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus
sure.
Three.
All right. 24 plus 3. Which is an average of, like, what, 5?
Yeah.
Yeah. So instead of actions, we'll put Bulmus.
Bulmus.
It's a Bulmus action.
This action don't got no bone in it.
So, hit points, because he is a halfling. Let's go ahead, put this at a
D8. A D8? I believe that's what it suggests for medium creature anyway. Okay, so he's got a D8 hit die.
This is a small creature, technically, because I'm a halfling. Unless I'm a really big halfling.
Okay, so D6s then.
Okay.
D6, so what CR are we going for?
Let's make it a CR5.
Jake's is CR5. All right. So CR5, which puts him at, according to my calculations,
You were to murder Traveler Jake,
yeah, you would get 1800 experience.
Let's go ahead.
Also puts, I'm not going to write it down, but his proficiency bonus at CR5 is +3. So now we know what to put for all this stuff.
I'll start filling that out while you guys do that.
So for hit points, I believe it's CR5 would be what, 66?
Well, it varies. So what's his armor class? Dex is +3. He's wearing leather armor, so that's +1. Let's say it's very nice, so let's give it a +1 on it. So +2
to my armor class?
No, to your hit points.
Oh, to my hit points.
Oh, I was thinking like armor class.
Oh, armor class, I put him at a 14 for 14. Dex and leather
he
armor.
Needs, I think he needs more than that. I think he needs more than that many hit dice. I think he needs 10d6.
Okay, so 10d6 would be 35 plus 5, so he has an average of 40 hit points.
That's not bad. Well, as you know what, that's not terrible. With the passive charm effect, yeah, that could wreak some havoc.
Yeah. I think when you factor in the abilities, it balances out pretty well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I dig it. So, we have created Traveler Jake.
Yeah. I like this, boys.
And even though this is kind of a meme-y stat block.
I'm adding one more thing.
With all three of us kind of working together and collaborating on this, you see, this only took us 10 minutes, 15 minutes maybe. Creating stat blocks is something that's not super difficult to do if you have kind of a good idea of what you're going for.
No. This is misnamed. This one is just called ADD. So long as he's had a computer screen for 6 hours. So what Ben has written here is he gave the name of the ability a whack sleep schedule. And then he made the ability say Jake does not require sleep to gain the benefits of a long rest so long as he's at a computer screen for 6 hours.
And then I added that he does not require 8 hours of sleep because I think that you could easily go off of like 4 hours.
I regularly
get the elven trance.
I could. I also changed the name of the ability to instead be ADD.
We are happy to have completed this, and we will be posting this. I mean, and when this episode is out, it's posted.
The funny part is that these two abilities are kind of backwards.
Yeah.
This goes a lot. I'm just gonna swap that now. That makes way more sense. All right. Good luck getting...
Oh, you're adding a new bonus action.
Good luck getting a computer screen into your campaign world.
Yep.
It's called a Nuggie for me.
Oh, this should be absurd. Hold on, this should be absurd right here. This needs to be really absurd. I should heal a bunch for this. All damage taken this turn.
In the...
Yeah.
In the Opriviopus round.
Google didn't even know what you were going for there, man. That was bad.
I got the fat finger disease.
Jake eats a nuggie. He heals all damage taken in the previous round. I like that.
Cannot eat a nuggie. Oh, no.
Recharges on a...
Oh, yeah. It's a recharge.
On a 5 or 6.
So what that would be is you'd go over here to where it says a nuggie for me, and then in parentheses you put...
Recharges 5 or 6.
Recharge 5, 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's when I find another nuggie in my pocket.
Yeah.
I go, ooh, a nuggie.
I think this has turned into more of like a CR7.
No, I think it balanced it out. I think it's balanced out now.
Because I don't really have too many hit points.
Yeah, and his armor class isn't amazing, so.
Yeah.
I'm happy with it.
All right.
I'm happy with this too.
We will have this posted when this episode is out, so... Whether you want to see it on our Instagram or our website or on Patreon, go check one of those sources out. Subscribe to our Patreon, maybe.
You know what, boys? I'm willing as far as to say that we'll make one of each of us by then.
Hey now. Mm-hmm. I don't know about all that.
I'll say it. I'll say it right now. Right
okay,
here, right now.
So Traveler Jake is now creating two more stat blocks.
Great. I get full creative control over your stat blocks.
I'm actually really curious to see what you make for mine. I would love to see it.
Oh, boy.
I'd like to see it tonight.
You know what I'd like to see?
All of our listeners going over to youtube.com/travelerstipsandtales, or maybe Instagram at Travelers Tips and Tales, or maybe on Facebook at Travelers Tips and Tales. Maybe they go on to Tumblr, which is Travelers Tips and Tales, or maybe our Patreon page, which is Travelers Tips and Tales, where they can become a patron and give us some money and support us. The best way you can do it is through Patreon for sure. Or you could also go on the ahead and email us any questions or anything you have about our podcast at travelerstipsandtales@gmail.com, or you can go onto our website and try and, you know, check out what kind of things you can find on Patreon, or just a little bit more about us or whatever at travelerstipsandtales.com, or, you know, maybe go to Twitter at tipstales. Gotcha. I thought it was going to be the same as every other one, but it's not.
Speaking of going to our Patreon, though, thanks, Ben's mom.
Yeah, nice our lady. Number one patron, and I say that because she's the only one that at the level where she gets a shout out on the podcast. But you could also have your name on our podcast, and wouldn't that be neat?
She's also at like, I think it's the highest or second highest.
She
level.
Is the highest. She's at the highest.
But she does not take advantage of like any of the benefits. She just supports fully.
You know what? She's out living her life, bro. She's like, I'm good.
I don't need
all that.
She a real homie.
She a real homie. Until next time, thank you for joining us.